Welcome to this edition of This Is Design Intelligence, conversations with leadership voices in the built environment. This edition is sponsored by the Tricord Group, leading successful relationship constructs for over 25 years, and VIM, helping the architecture and design disciplines design, deliver, and operate better buildings for a better world.
Greetings, this is Dave Gilmore. Today I'm sitting down with Kelly Farrell, the President and CEO of Callison RTKL. Callison RTKL is a global firm of consequence. Kelly has stepped into this role after a 20-plus year career of leading teams and design around the world. Kelly is a force to be reckoned with. I've so enjoyed my relationship with her over these many months, and so we're looking forward to this time together. This time, by the way, is the first of a two-part series in our discussions with Kelly. Kelly Farrell, here you are. You entered about a year ago into a pretty big position as the global CEO of Callison RTKL, which is, what, the third largest architectural firm?
We're up there. We're up there.
You're up there pretty big.
I think it changes every so many years, but yeah. We're up there.
Yeah, and so big stuff happening around. And, you know, that was a non-traditional, non-intuitive choice. To suddenly, on a traditional firm, they brought in wonderfully recognized the value of you as an individual, you as a woman, and you as a 40-something-year-old. That is a pretty big series of changes for a traditional firm.
Yeah, and maybe we're trying not to be so traditional after all, right? Maybe those things go together, and I'd like to think that they do. You say it's a year, and I will tell you, I think we got just about everything that can happen in a lifetime in a year. So
it's just been unbelievable.
It feels like 5 years. It was a year last week. The last 4 months have felt like 4 years. So, yeah, I feel pretty seasoned now. That might be the way to put it. Feel pretty seasoned.
Fast-tracked all the way. Well, here we are in the midst of COVID-19. As one of the senior epidemiologists up at Harvard said in the last week, if this was a 9-inning baseball game, we have just entered the second inning. And so this is probably, from at least an economic standpoint, going to go much longer than we expect. So I look at this, and as a leader of a global design and solutions firm, you have a different view of the professions and the processes driving this built environment industry. You and I have spoken several times about the resident dysfunction in our industry. And so here we are with COVID-19. The dramatic economic fallout engulfing just about every client and market type.
And it will for some time.
Yeah, that's right. And yet, all of this change has hit us. What changes, though, should we posture ourselves towards, as opposed to just being always in a reactive mode? How ought we to ride this wave into a positive future, knowing what we have spoken about in the dysfunction of the past?
Yeah, well, maybe we just, I think this goes without saying, but yet we find ourselves saying it all the time. It's time for the profession to really be bold and fearless. No better time than now. You know, if I look at where we're going in our kind of push to be non-traditional, we're hyper-focused on people and ecosystems. And as we look at how we come out of this and what we're doing, I think we're two steps down the road on that. We're well past how do we come out of it, and we're hyper focused on, okay, what are the fun things we get to go do? How do we, as a profession, quit talking about being impactful and really be impactful? Someone said this to me this morning, actually. They said, you know, there's a curious thing. Designers talk about their potential to have impact. And if you look at the nurses and doctors out in the world right now, they have a daily impact. So as a profession, I think it's time for us to start doing on a bigger, bolder, more fearless level.
Wow. Yeah. I love that dichotomy between healthcare and architecture. You know, that's a big statement.
Yeah. Well, there's so much to it, right? We, as a profession, we've historically taken on incremental change.
Mm-hmm.
hey, we'll improve by 2%, we'll improve by 5%, we'll improve by 10%. It's okay. But now we're at this moment where we can make really big change. And you know, if we look at the people side, the incremental side is the conversation around physical safety and physical health right now. Mm-hmm. When you come back, how do we make it touchless? How do we prevent infectious disease spread? But the bigger conversation is, well, how do we correct all the inequities that we've always known have been there? But man, the inequitable levels in how we live, work, and learn, they're pretty intolerable right now.
Yeah.
And we're seeing their impacts on society. So I think, you know, we've all always understood asset class, hospitals, hospitality, residential, retail, like whatever it is, we've all understood asset class for so long and actually quite good at it, mm-hmm. right? I think most firms would say, yeah, actually we're experts in that. I think the value of those asset classes are being discussed in every virtual boardroom around the world. It's the value of an office. It used to be the place where people came to work. Well, it turns out they can work just about anywhere in a lot of professions. So it's the value of the space. I think we've got to hit well-being in a much harder, more tangible way to make sure that our communities and our ecosystems around the globe really help us thrive. So that it's a measured impact. Like, how do you measurably improve well-being? Yeah, I think the environmental discussion is a huge one, and I hope we can get to that in detail in a minute. But we've got to solve socioeconomic resilience, not just environmental resilience. It's got to be the full package.
No, absolutely. And yet, we're so inclined toward myopic thinking, right, as opposed to multidimensional in nature. And I love that you just brought that idea of socioeconomics together with environmental responsibility and the future around these things. But let's step back. You had said something a moment ago about people.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we look at the dynamics of talent, you know, and there's, of course, talent in every profession and every job, there's talent. But the dynamics of talent are radically changing now. We're going to see new patterns and processes and protocols and by the way, proximities too, right? Because we can't sit next elbow to elbow. What should we be thinking about? And how should we be engaging talent going forward? This, of course, is the heart and soul of the architectural profession. It is our assets, are the people that come and go every day, right? How should we be thinking differently now that we are our eyes are opening to a new reality around proximity and virtuality and responsibility at a whole new level?
Well, if there's ever been a pendulum swing, I think we're right at the severe end of it. Mm-hmm. We went from an industry where a lot of people didn't have very mobile work practices. You had travelers, as I would call them, people who generally worked out of the office, but offices were where creativity happened and studios are where creativity happened. We also know that everyone virtual is lacking a little bit too. I've got a huge belief, and we as a practice have a huge belief that your values should set policy, not the other way around, right? Policy has this weird unintended consequence of putting value at the center. It's actually quite the other way around. Value should be driving what those policies are. We started pushing some really progressive policies last year because we knew we wanted a more diverse workforce. And if I give you an example, they were around family leave. And we said the problem with family leave policies is they often look at children as a woman's issue, not a family issue. So if we as a business can switch them to a family discussion, then we can get what we want, which is a more diverse workforce. I think post-COVID, the conversation on talent is quite the same. Conventional wisdom says it takes 30 days to break a habit. I still struggle with that one. I think it takes me 90, but whatever. But 60 days to create a new one. All of our people have realized that there's a lot of value in the time they spend to and from work. I think they are impressed by their abilities to really work together in a virtual environment. And I think the other thing that we've realized is we can bring talent together, and we've known this, but maybe not done it at the scale. we can bring talent together from almost any location, anywhere. So in terms of the dynamics around talent, we see the policies, the process, the protocols, all driving towards a much more networked environment where there are going to be things that we come to the office to do. Probably not in the short term, but in the mid to long term, yeah, there's a purpose to why we gather and what we can do when we're face to face. We also know we can put real value to how we're working in that virtual environment. So we see the future being quite the combination of the two. Really technology and people coming together to achieve more.
It's extraordinary when you think about it because it reprioritizes our use of time. And when we think about coming back together, like you were just saying, when we do come together, it's almost like the priority of having an appointment, right? You set an appointment and we're going to have this appointment and we're going to get and we're going to show up in this place in a room with each other and we're going to be really intentional and powerful things will occur as opposed to, I'm going to come and sit in a cubicle today. You know, that kind of, it is extraordinary.
It is. You know, there's a, Priya Parker has a book out, and if you haven't read it, it's The Art of Gathering. It's phenomenal. And her position is that gatherings have to have purpose. They aren't just circumstantial things that happen in the course of a day. You've got to have purpose and you've got to have a wanted outcome so that the people who attend, the people who gather, the people who participate really make something happen with their time. And I think the world of working understands that as a premise, but we got lax about it. Mm-hmm. And it's a real opportunity for us to take those things and make them more purposeful in terms of how we work as an organization, but how we work as an ecosystem of organizations so that we're making good progress.
What a prophetic book almost, right? For a time such as this. Yeah. It's very special. So the change that occurs in these new talent dynamics is really pushing what I talk about quite a bit, which is a reinvention of the profession. It is reinventing our ways and means, our comings and goings, as you say, our purpose. Maybe that's not redefined, but more clarified. But what comes out of that purpose, I think, is a call for something radically new into the future. You want to speak into that at all?
Yeah, I do. I couldn't agree more with not only where we're going, but what the value of our accomplishments are. We launched a project right before. We'd been working on this diligently, I think, for 2 years now. We launched a project with two partners, DMG and DH, and we came together to talk about happiness, that we could actually create a methodology and a measure to apply happiness in the built environment. And on the surface, it sounds super like lovely, like, oh, happiness sounds great. But we think it's much more than being nice. You know, we look back at folks like Maslow, who in the 40s taught us all about human motivation and human need. And frankly, the built environment crawled up a few prongs. But we have a long way to go. And so focusing on that effort, and I think a lot, you'll see a lot of our efforts going forward are about the bigger tangible impact. We know that a happier society, a happier community, or a happier company, well, it has one thing in common: better outcomes, bigger impacts. We believe that designers can orchestrate that through design, can enhance it and make it better. And it's the same conversation we're having about socioeconomics. We can plan communities for better socioeconomic outcomes. It's not just about land value. It's more about how all of those systems come together to create a better community, a better city, a better state, a better country. And we've got to radically shift the focus to be a lot faster, a lot less incremental, and a lot more forward-facing on those agendas, because then we've got larger purpose going forward. You know, you and I talk about talent a lot. And I think if you had asked me 10 years ago what the shape of the firm looked like, I would have probably said, well, we have a lot of architects and interior designers, and we have a few engineers. I'm really proud today to say we have nurses and sociologists and psychologists and analysts and modelers in our teams. And if anyone listening to this is out studying and you're studying any of the design professions, pick up a science while you're at it. If you're out studying the sciences, please consider joining us because it's the way where all of those ideas can really synthesize and frankly get something done that matters. And I think that's our big opportunity, is to heavily push forward into those arenas as we move through this.
So I'm listening to this. I'm listening to this exciting future of where the overall multiple disciplines of design, engineering, et cetera, could play a part in the recreation of the world that really impacts the socioeconomics of communities, the local environmental impact, as well as the global. But at the end of the day, so much of this has to do with how the building owner, the financiers of these projects that we engage ourselves in, really see life. And because more often than not, we find ourselves at their beck and call. The owners are the ones who are ultimately the ones who have their hands on the rudder, per se. How do we engage the owning community into a larger vision like this to start to pick up some of these essential, critical dimensions of life beyond the profit and loss statement?
Two ways. First one, I think, is larger than just the design community. We're all users of someone's property, of someone's asset. And the way in which we all choose to use, engage, and benefit from those assets often helps our owners identify what's valuable. It's part of the services we actually provide for them today. What makes your asset valuable? How do we know that? How do we know that you're going to get the return? So I think as users, we have an obligation to really step out and engage with and be a part of the properties, the communities that give us the value we're looking for. As professionals, as service providers to owners, we've got to bring more. Just saying that we've done something before isn't actually a credential I think most people are looking for. I think we've got to bring, and we're pretty hell-bent on bringing, the science, data, and research that shows that you can have more, that you can spend that dollar more wisely. Maybe you're not spending $2 for every dollar. Maybe it's the same dollar that you're spending, but we can move towards a better outcome. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the challenge of the industry, is show up with better. Challenge the way that it's been done. Challenge the approach to the problem. We're pretty diverse in terms of typology or practice area, and we are finding more and more, the more we mix them up, the more we bring folks who don't have 15 years of history in that same typology to the table, the better the solution is.
Yes.
Because they're willing to look at it differently. You know, in our business, retail has probably taken the largest hit, right? I mean, it's all over the news. Retailers are struggling right now. There's also a very unique thing about shopping and dining. You choose to do it. If you need to go to the hospital, usually that isn't a voluntary decision. Everyone does choose to a certain extent where they live. But when you go out into the world and you say, hey, I'm going to go enjoy myself, I'm going to go have dinner, I'm going to go be in this environment, there's a real connectivity that design makes into making those places that people love. Mm-hmm. Well, we want to bring that influence to all sorts of different places. Why? Because even if you're not choosing it, you should really enjoy it. And it should, at its core, that experience, that event, add to who you are, to what you're trying to achieve. So I do think as practitioners, as professionals, it's our job to be multidisciplinary, to cross over, to get into the fuzzy gray space and bring our clients and bring our communities something better. And that's a step that everyone needs to make. Not everyone will make it. I think the firms that will really thrive, the firms that will really move forward, they'll make it as a leap and just say, hey, you know what? We're here. Let's try it. I think our clients are really open to it, at least our clients.
Yep.
And they're saying, yeah, like, talk to me. Talk to me. Why would I do this differently? And what we're finding ourselves in is probably almost the academic lens of, well, let's reset the problem first, right? We started the conversation about a building. Let's talk about what it's meant to do. What's its mission? And how can we make that happen? Mm-hmm. So I really think the industry has a massive opportunity, but it's got to make that jump. It's got to make that leap into inviting more people into its house.
And so I love that, because it's really speaking about transdisciplinary design. At the end of the day, design is the emulsifier, right? We're designing something, right? But it has all this transdisciplinary eyeballs are all over it, that it's bringing new things, new voices into this construct. And at the end of the day, that's all about solutions, real solutions. I've been saying for some time that the poor architects, they get paid for drawings and models and schedules, which are nothing more nor less than the artifacts of their true value. But they're not getting paid for their true value. You're getting paid for the artifacts of value. And that the real value is in the way that an architect thinks. The unbelievable capability and capacity to solve ridiculously complex problems at scale. Who does this, right? I mean, this is unbelievable. But we get paid for our drawing.
Well, personally, I believe the future is that we get paid for the purpose, we get paid for the impact, and we do it better with partners.
Yes.
You know, the other comment I'll make on clients is some of our clients are our best partners going forward. Mm. They have the intelligence in their organizations about how to move that needle. And as they open it up, as we invite them into other work, as we invite them into projects, as they invite us in to rethink the opportunity that's in front, we're finding that that partnership is as valuable of any other partner that we bring to the table. Mm, yeah. So we shouldn't lose track of them in that regard. But I'm with you. The artifact's interesting. We're going to have a real question about paper going forward, I have a feeling.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's going to be quite the digital artifact, but maybe it's not an artifact after all. We're starting to advance, you know, living drawings. Mm. How does what we know about the place that we've created for you help inform the next six places that you're going to create, or what the value of that portfolio might be? So we're trying pretty hard. We're in our we're in many phases of the program, but don't let those things become paper. Let them become tools that we use going forward.
So it's one of the things that I love about spending time with you and looking deeply into Callison RTKL is that you guys are not afraid to experiment, to explore, to try some new things in a pretty cool way. I love the way you just spun that in a wonderful way of moving that our things become tools toward a future. They're not one and done's at the end of the day. I'm going to pivot here a little bit because
All right.
I want to talk about the environment. Near and dear to our hearts. And here you are in Los Angeles, California, and believe it or not, your skies are clear. It's unbelievable what's happened in COVID-19. All of its destructive power, it has laid us back into this new posture where the waters in Venice are clean, the air over Beijing is clean, the air over Los Angeles is clean. It's unbelievable. I wrote recently that those folks who say that humans have nothing to do with climate change are probably a little embarrassed at this point, because we've we've stopped so quickly and the world healed itself so quickly. There's a
pretty
direct correlation there. What are we going to do, Kelly, about the future of environmental responsibility now that we've seen this moment in time? Are we just going to go back to our same foolishness, or is this the leap forward opportunity? And if it is, what does that mean?
Well, let me add one more thing. And this is a reason why we can't go back. I think I've been reading more about infectious disease than ever before in my life.
Yeah.
And what I've learned, I've been reading a lot from the World Health Organization and other infectious disease experts. And what they're saying is what we're seeing now with COVID zoonotic, right? Originated in an animal and transferred to humans. They believe there is a direct correlation between urbanization, climate change, and the increase of these cases. In the last 30 years, we've had something like 30 new human pathogens. Mm-hmm. 22 of them started, 75% of them started in animals. And it's not that the animal illnesses are new, it's we've lost our environmental layering that filters these diseases before they get to us. We've gone a little bit too far and we've broken our edges. So we've got to work harder to build those ecosystems back up and build those barriers back up, because we're going to see more and more of this, not less and less. So yeah, I do believe this is the time to take the big step. I don't believe that our clients can just do it alone. I think it takes good policy. It takes good planning for that policy. And it takes a smart way of looking at how we go into our existing building infrastructure and start to morph it to the right performance level, to the right outcomes. It's not just about changing our position on the fuels that we use, but changing how we look at assets and changing the KPIs for their performance. So I'm with you. I don't know how anyone can go outside. You know, you're right, I do live in LA. I've lived here 16 years. I have just learned about bioluminescence in the Red Sea in Los Angeles. Mm. And if you haven't looked it up, it's magical. The ocean turns electric blue when the sea life that has now gathered because people and boats aren't in the ocean gets scared. Well, it happens every time a wave crashes or a boat makes a wake. And it's stunning. And there's a part of me that says, wow, this is probably once in a lifetime. And that's a great tragedy. We should have this air quality every single day. I think looking at our commuting habits, it's something we need to do. If we had set out to say, hey, we're going to cut commuting in all of the world's major cities by 50%, we would have given ourselves 15 years to do it. We would have looked at teensy tiny incremental change. And at the end of the day, we probably would have said, well, it's just not going to work. Well, here we are. For many people, it's somewhere between a month in, 2 months in, or 4 months into COVID. And we've learned that a lot of the population doesn't need to commute, that the value of that commute time is different. And oh yeah, small detail, the impact on our environment is massive. Mm. So we've got to take real clear steps now. Otherwise, there'll be a memory. Do you remember that COVID thing, how blue the sky was? I just haven't seen it that blue in a long time.
Yeah.
And that can't be acceptable for us as a society. So I think some of it's policy driven. I think frank policy has a way of helping, but it's also the solutions that we're all bringing to the table. The technologies, the strategies are there. We need to use them more handedly and more deftly. And I realize that we often talk about cost when we talk about these things. Oh, it's more expensive. Well, not necessarily. And the other comment I'll make is that cost usually has a direct correlation to abundance. The more of these strategies we're employing, the more activity that we're making in these markets, the more normalized their cost gets. And I think that's on all of us to say, yeah, let's go get them. Let's go pull them into our work. Let's go work with our clients to drive solutions that aren't cost heavy so that we can get them done faster and bring this to not just be a moment in time, but really kind of the environmental reset for how we go forward.
So I have a favor to ask. I want to do a part two with you.
I'd love to.
So
I'd absolutely love to.
So we have things more to talk about. We only scratched the moment here on environmental responsibility. We barely got into the issues around socioeconomics and what does that mean to the design community and what impact can we have. We haven't even talked about technology yet, Kelly.
Oh, that's so, a whole nother topic.
We have lots of things and the impact of on culture. And the use of language that the design community, the industry, can bring to society. There's so many more topics for us to cover. I hope that you will join me again and we'll do a part two on this and punctuate this one with a comma so that we can come back to it.
I would absolutely love to. I always enjoy our conversations. And as I said, I believe that they help the world go in the right place and help the profession advance.
Thanks so much,
Thanks
Kelly.
So much.
Okay.
Talk to you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us today. We look forward to our next time with Kelly in part two, where we'll be discussing larger topics around technology, culture, and more on environmental responsibility. So until next time.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of This Is Design Intelligence, sponsored by the Tricord Group and VIM. The producer for This Is Design Intelligence is Laura Spells. Sound engineering by Jared Knabel. This has been a DI Media Group production.